Welcome to Growing Indoors, a limited podcast series from Cannabis Business Times, brought to you with the support of Foes. The 06i LED Grow Light by Foes is the best one-to-one HPS replacement on the market. Whether it's in a greenhouse or an indoor grow house, the 06i produces more photons per footprint than any other light on the market. It provides 50% greater output and 42% better efficacy than HPS lights, without producing the harmful infrared heat that HPS is known for. See what Foes Lighting can do for your crops by requesting a free custom lighting plan at foes.com, that's F-O-H-S-E.com, and scheduling a facility tour today. My name is Eric Sandy, and I'm the digital editor for the Cannabis Group at GIE Media. We're back again to continue our 10-episode project, where we are focusing our interviews on indoor cannabis cultivation from a broad spectrum of angles. This is episode 8. Our guest this week is Tyson Lewis, the owner of High Noon Cultivation in Oregon, an indoor cultivation business founded in 2014. We got into his experiences with pheno hunting and the craft cannabis segment in general. As the industry expands, even in the longer-running market like Oregon, how might growers tap into a unique niche to satisfy more nuanced consumer demand? With the indoor environment and all the data available to Tyson, there's a real opportunity to home in on special genetics and dynamic flower. With all that said, please enjoy my conversation with Tyson Lewis. All right, Tyson, well, thanks so much for joining us on the show this week. Very glad to get a chance to talk to you and get in some details about High Noon's operation. We're going to talk about pheno hunting this week and sort of the craft cannabis segment in particular, standing out in a crowded marketplace, things like that. But before getting into some of those more specific topics, I was wondering if maybe you could set the stage by just describing High Noon's facility and some of the notable characteristics that stand out to you.
Sure. Yeah, thanks, Eric. It's great to be here. So High Noon is a mixed-tier canopy grow in Oregon, more specifically Molalla, Oregon. We're about 6,500 square feet flowering canopy in our indoor. We more recently switched to doing some light depth, about 4,000 square feet of canopy and light depth, specifically for the hash market. On our facility, we have two main flower buildings and one 20 light dedicated to pheno hunting and ongoing selection of new and exciting genetics to release to the market. Our methods, we do stick to a pretty strict regimen of organics. We kind of have a modified low till. So we run raised beds indoor and on our outdoor. So it's kind of a brief synopsis of what we do here.
Fantastic. Yeah, and definitely some threads that I want to pull at and some paths that we can walk down in a moment. But maybe before that, just sort of continuing this stage here, just wanted to rewind the clock a bit and get a sense of maybe even the origin story of High mm-hmm. Noon. And when you set out to build the company and build the team, what were some of the goals that were motivating you?
So, I'd probably have to go back a little, a ways on how this started. I call it like pre-industry times is where we started. I've been doing this probably about 21 years now. So pretty much half of my life I've been in cannabis and growing. And it really comes from the early days of, I was introduced to some people and it was really like a synthetic three-part nutrient, really just a set it, forget it methods. And as it transitioned, it ran into, organics and we started pushing, to keep it interesting. We were always pushing for craft and making it better and doing more with less. So that kind of evolved into our medical programs, where the emphasis on having a clean, good product for patients became more important. And then in 2014, we had the opportunity to jump in the recreational market, and that quest to constantly, improve and stay ahead, kind of led us into, we were pretty early in pheno hunting, out of the gate into rec. And that's really kind of brought our team together of people that really care about, you know, always providing new and always pushing boundaries. We got a pretty small team, but it's, you know, it's what we live, we breathe, you know, it's our day-to-day life. So High Noon's more of a, you know, yes, it's a company, but it's a big evolution of a lot of people and like-minded things going on here.
Absolutely. And, you know, before getting into some of those specifics about, the pheno hunting process and the actual work mm-hmm. that goes into that, I was wondering if you could define craft cannabis and maybe sure. even specifically define it within Oregon in particular.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough word. It's, you know, these words kind of get worn out a little bit. I'd say a craft producer is somebody that's a little smaller scale, less commercial production, really concentrating and driving the highest quality possible from start to finish. You know, it's a, let alone just delivering a craft product, it's, you know, selection of what we run, methods used, and really, you know, delivering that end quality product and not skipping any of the steps, strictly for profit to get that end product.
Yeah, I'm curious, just real quick, if you think, because I you know, I sort of second guess the term myself, and I've used it a sure. couple times in this series, and certainly in other pieces for Cannabis Business Times. Again, not to get hung up on it, but do you think it's a helpful term, or do you think there are other ways of distinguishing small growers with that sort of focus that you're talking about, distinguishing yeah, them in the broader market?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of always our battle, is how to deliver this to the consumer. You know, they take a lot of things off the table from identifying what we do. You know, organics we can't use. Craft is kind of a term that, you know, small batch craft is kind of watered down now. You know, small batch can be a large commercial, you know, 100,000 square foot grow that they grow 40 lights of one strain. They call that craft. So there's kind of lines get blurred there. But, you know, in Oregon, I'd say, you know, we call it the usual suspects. You know, there's probably 20 that hit the shelf, the top shelf, and do it really well. And in Oregon, I think when we say craft, we really mean, you know, a sustainable approach, and just an ever-present thing to just drive to be better and do better. And it really shows the people that care on that finished product. You know, it's almost like a hand, you know, hand grown, hand selected, hand trimmed, you know, just down the steps of the line, just crafting that product instead of just producing a bulk good.
No doubt. Well, and certainly just the work of pheno hunting, of course, is a major through line there. So maybe beginning with a bit of a just open-ended question, could you maybe describe in general terms the pheno hunting process and what you and your team are, you know, A, trying to accomplish, but B, you know, literally doing sure. to hit your goals?
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, pheno hunting is, it's a pretty in-depth process. You know, you can just pop some seeds, run some, you know, things, find out what's best and, you know, get to your end product. But for us, we dive really deep into it and really pushing to select the best. And that comes from, you know, from the time the seeds cracked, you know, it's really important to, in a pheno hunt, to, if you're going to do it right from the beginning. And making selections, not from, you know, completely the finished product, but as, we go through the process, you know, how does this plant grow in a vegetative state? How does it transition to flower? How does it root? You know, of course, the most important thing is the, you know, look, smell, effect, but also factors of, you know, vigor and selecting for a strong plant. And also through the flowering process, we continually watch it, how much maintenance takes. And then as it finishes, there's also an aspect we've been selecting to kind of the shape of the bud, the stretch and the elongation for post-harvest trimming and productions, and the ease and uniformity when it comes, you know, when your nug size come out the back end of the trimming room there. So it's a constant process. We're continually taking notes, and, you know, often you're throwing a curveball and, you know, you think you got something good and, you know, comes out of the trimming room and it's like, you know, that actually wasn't so good or it didn't cure right. So, for us, it's a, you know, it doesn't stop at when the flower is finished, you know, it continues on down the line. And ultimately at the finish, you know, as much as we don't like this, we have to, deliver a product that the market wants at the end of the day, and testing is a part of that. So we look at terpene percentages and THC percentages. And that's kind of the if it makes it through all the steps, it goes to that final process. And I'd say as we run seeds, I'd say we probably choose 2 out of 1,000 seeds we run that really make it into production. So from the time that we crack a seed, we run a test on it. We then run a small production test on it to make sure that it's a stable genetic. When I say stable genetic, that means it doesn't throw male pollen sacs and pollinate a room. Because oftentimes 2 or 3 runs down the line, it'll do that. So from the time we crack a seed to the time we finish, it's about, I'd say about 16 months that we get a viable strain that we can run in our main garden.
Wow. Along the way, of course, there's a lot of people involved. I'm just curious, even just a real basic sense, what are some of the most efficient ways to track all those variables? Meaning, literally the notes that you and your team are keeping, what ways have you found to be really successful in making sure that it's all tracked and shared among everybody who needs to know what's going on?
Sure. Yeah, we have we're a pretty small, efficient team of people that are really dedicated to this. Our head grower, Jack Tian, and I consult mainly on these, and then he'll consult downline with the team. And you know, it's a, you know, a constant note taking, and by the time we're finished with these strains, it's we're so engulfed in it, you know, we can identify which ones are which on that, you know, throughout the process, you almost, get to know these plants as if they're, you know, your dog.
Yeah,
you know, it's just really being plugged into the plant, and you know, end of the day, it's about really caring about it.
Yeah, I'm curious if you have maybe, you know, a recently stabilized, or just recent in general, a recent strain that you'd like to either point to that has notable traits that sure, that were selected for along the way that come to mind.
Yeah, I've got 2 that come to mind. So when we taught, you know, there's great strains, and then we call them legendary strains, and very few things fit into the legendary, you know, envelope of things. But one we've found in the last year that I guess we can classify into that legendary would be platinum garlic butter. That's an in-house genetic selection. It's a pretty simple cross. It's platinum and GMO. As far as, you know, veg size and capability of rooting and growth, it's explosive. It's absolutely a beautiful flower. It's got great flavor and taste. That's probably one I could say in the last year that's really surprised us across the board.
Awesome. Yeah, I think, it's interesting having those tiers and having just a very select number of strains making it into that that legendary tier. It's got to be a nice benchmark to hit with the team.
Yeah.
You know, I want to just touch on the indoor environment too, of course, I guess being the through line of this series. Obviously, there are different environments to grow cannabis in, and the indoor environment allows for a pretty tight degree of control. So I'm curious, just along the pheno hunting process, as you're taking these notes, could you maybe speak to the benefits of being in an indoor environment while doing that kind of work?
Yeah. We do run, I'll just kind of go off track and come back around here. We do run pheno hunting outside in our depths, mainly for hash strains. But the variability of the weather outside will give you some pretty distinct changes. If you get a hot spell, you'll elongate. It's hard to get a real idea what a plant will do. Unless you're just growing for bulk and size on the outdoor. Indoor, you know, we have a set parameter that everything runs consistent on in our pheno hunting room. And it's, you know, it's kind of a baseline for a set of strains. So not a whole lot of variables. Of course, there are some, but it gives you more of a direct idea of what a strain's capable of.
For sure. I'm curious, you know, of course, you and your team have been in the game for quite a while, but as we look into the near-term future or even just really the rest of the year, are there certain, you know, genetic either characteristics or techniques that you're working on right now or excited and trying to achieve either in the pheno hunting process or elsewhere in the process?
Yeah, along with pheno hunting, we do some breeding in-house. I think that's probably what we're most excited about. We've developed a few things that recently that have been a really, you know, we select things and sometimes we select things and we're like, this is the best thing ever. We send it to market and it doesn't get the best response or vice versa. You know, it's like, it's okay. You know, like it's got a lot of terps, but the look isn't that great or up to what we like and the market loves it. So recently we've been playing with some older genetics, bringing them back. We did a sour diesel blueberry Mendo breath cross that was received really well in the market. And that's kind of the excitement, I think, is just kind of going back and bringing some of the older stuff forward and creating some hybrids with the new age growth and vigor and some of the older terps. That's a question we often ask. It's like, what's next? You know, it's like, I think the last really big hit we had was GMO and it's been a while. So I think people are ready for something new. I wish I had a magic ball and I knew which the next thing was going to be, because that's kind of part of the game. But really, you know, for us, it's just kind of selecting something unique and something that everybody doesn't have.
Yeah, I mean, and even in the absence of having a crystal ball like that, what are some of the, I guess, signals that you've been getting from the Oregon market? And I ask that only because Obviously, yeah. It's one of the longer running legal markets, but how have tastes been shifting there?
We're kind of in this valley right now, I feel. A lot of things are dictated by, outside of white markets. You know, I can tell you what's not trending right now. It seems to be the market has a dislike for tangies, those flavor profiles, pinenes, and more of a focus on some of the older OG. The gas and fruit seem to be really good profiles to hit right now. That being said, kind of what we're seeing right now is, Oregon as a whole has really stepped up. A lot of the producers have been putting in a lot of work for the last, 2 years. It used to be, you'd go to a dispensary and you might've been one or two strains you were really, wow about, but the boundaries are really being pushed out here, and it's kind of fun to see. Everybody's kind of, we kind of have a lane we all run in, and it's kind of cool to see, different farms fall into, whether it be they're the burger farm or the GMO farm or the cake farm, just kind of different profiles that different people like to pull out and run with. So I'd say instead of like a direct profile or strain people are running for, I think it's kind of running into, everybody kind of having their own angle they run. It used to be, Trop Cookies would get hot and then everybody would run it, or White Truffle. And I think everybody's kind of shying away from that and kind of bringing on and, developing their own unique strains and profiles.
Yeah, I think that's a really cool trend to see, and certainly one of the more, fun sides of a pretty competitive industry, just seeing the creative sides of everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like what you're saying there, everybody's got their own way of doing this, and at least maybe just specifically talking about pheno hunting, there's, a thousand ways to skin a cat and different variables to look at. But I'm curious if there is anything overall that maybe other growers either might be doing wrong that you see a lot. And wrong might not be the right word, but misconceptions out there or red flags that maybe might be worth pointing out.
Yeah, I think, what I see a lot of is, you can select it from pheno hunting. Anybody can run 20, 30 seeds and find a plant that like looks good and tastes good. But what I see a lot of people missing on is selecting genetics from a stability point, a vigor point, and pushing that boundary instead of, no yield isn't our main concern, but vigor and health, I think, as we move forward from, if we've learned anything from, the past going through, pest issues, and as we're seeing more viroids and things like that, I think selecting for health and vigor, clonability, just instead of selecting just on maybe quality and the end product, I think selections made for, yes, it's a great end product, but does it check all the boxes before you get to that end product also? And I think that's going to be the point where, right now it's a lot of just, hype. We call them pollen chuckers. It's just cross one thing to another. And, it's really going to narrow down our gene pool if we don't select for vigor. And we've seen a lot of that recently. Some really, really hard times for a lot of people when they make a selection, they think it's stable. They fill half of a room with it and it's just completely unstable, and it pollinates everything. So, you know, that extended amount of testing on the genetics and making sure they hit the requirements before. Because we are, you know, we kind of have a running joke with some of our friends. And, you know, it's just, it's purple gas cake. You know, it's just like everything's purple gas cake, you know. And at the end of the day, I think we need to try and select for, you know, unique things, all kind of go in this kind of different direction. And I think that'd make the industry stronger and every brand kind of develop their own lane, because it is a big industry and, you know, we all get pretty competitive, but I do believe there's room for a lot of, as we could call them, craft producers, as we see in Oregon.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a really helpful frame for thinking about just the market in general and certainly what each operator can do in their own market, you know, in Oregon and outside of it. And yeah, this has been a really, really great window into what you're doing at High Noon, Tyson. Really appreciate your insight here and definitely very glad to have you on the show this week.
Yeah, likewise. Appreciate it, Eric.
And that's a wrap on another episode of Growing Indoors. Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Tyson Lewis from High Noon Cultivation out in Oregon. I know I did. It's always fun to talk about pheno hunting in particular. Super fun topic in the wide range of topics relating especially to indoor cultivation. So very glad we had a chance to sit down with Tyson and get into some of the more specific aspects of that part of the business. Again, this was episode 8. We've got 2 more episodes in Growing Indoors, the series brought to you by the good folks at FOHS. Check them out at FOHSE.com. As I said at the top of this episode, 2 more episodes. We'll be back next couple Thursday mornings with episode 9 and 10 of Growing Indoors. Thank you.